Reading from Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu, Sadhana Bhakti, First Division, Eastern Section, Second Wave, Sadhana Bhakti. Siddhantas Tobeda Pi Shrisa Krishna Sarupayo. Raseno Krishyate Krishna Rupa Mesha Rasastati. Rupa Goswami said, though the forms of Vishnu and Krishna are non-different, according to the statements of scripture, Krishna's form is shown to be superior because of his rasas, which are endowed with the highest type of prema. The very nature of Krishna's rasas shows Krishna's form to be superior. Of course, there's a rather extensive purport by Jiva Goswami, but the verse itself is telling that, because it's a big debate among Vaishnavas, who's supreme? Vishnu supreme, Ram supreme, Krishna. And then others say, well, they're all one. God is one. Vishnu is God, Ram is God, Krishna is God. The Nrisimha, the Dasavatara, they're all God. So we say, that's why Lord Chaitanya is a perfect harmonist. He's the absolute harmonist. Because he can create harmony wherever there is discord. And Kali Yuga is the age of discord, the age of disharmony, and the age of conflict, the age of fighting. So the philosophy of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu is the perfect philosophy that synthesizes all the opposing elements in Kali Yuga. Achintya Bheda Bheda Tattva. The inconceivable simultaneous oneness and difference of the Absolute. And everything else, practically speaking. So to solve this argument, we say, yes, God is one. And it is a fact, Krishna, Ram, Nrisimha, they're all God. But now that's the abade, the non-difference, the oneness. Now what's the difference? So here, Rupa Goswami is making a very curious statement, because he's saying, Siddhanta to abade. He says in Siddhanta, as far as the final philosophy or the conclusion of philosophy is, there is no difference, abade, between Vishnu and Krishna and Ram, as far as Siddhanta. But then he says, but rasa, Krishna Rupam, he said, but if you consider rasa, then there's no comparison. Krishna wins the challenge, hands down. There's no way that Ram or Vishnu or Narayan can compete with Krishna in this term, in terms of rasa. And then he goes on to say, so first he says, the forms of Vishnu and Krishna are non-different according to statements of Shastra. Because everywhere the Shastras, Puranas, Smritis, will say that Krishna and Ram, Vishnu, they're all Vishnu Tattva. You've heard this term, Vishnu Tattva. Jiva Tattva, Vishnu Tattva, Shakti Tattva. But when it comes to Rasa, then there's a difference. So then he's saying, so therefore, on the basis of rasa, although the forms of Vishnu, Narayan, and Krishna, and Ram are one, but when we take the category of rasa, then we find that there's difference. So then he goes on, then he ends the verse by saying, yes, there's a difference between Krishna's, the form of Krishna is different in terms of rasa. Then he says, the very nature of rasas shows that Krishna's form is superior. So now, this is how we can establish, yes, okay, they're one in Siddhanta, but there's a difference in rasa. And because Krishna has all these rasas, he's Rasaraj, he has all the possible rasas in the fullest development, therefore, although the forms of God are one, the form of Krishna is supreme on the basis of his being the absolute reservoir or unlimited ocean of all rasas. The term is Akila Rasamrita Sindhu. So this is how we solve the debate. We agree and we disagree. Yes, Vishnu is God, Krishna is God, Narayan, Ram. But is there a difference? And most people, they say there's no difference. Why? All religious wars and crusades and debates and fighting is all due to this fighting over differences rather than harmonizing over similarities. So we say, yeah, there's oneness and there's difference. Yes, you're right. Vishnu and Krishna are God. But you're wrong. Krishna is the supreme form on this basis. So most people can't digest that or even understand that. What does it mean by rasa? Then you have to explain. Jiva Goswami's Tika, in this verse, he gives some explanation to support our own arguments and our own understanding, because we should be very convinced, at least sure, that we can stand our solid footing if someone challenges us. How can you say you're Krishna Supreme? He's Swayam Bhagavan. Why is he Swayam Bhagavan? We have Bhagavan Narayan, Bhagavan Vishnu. Why the distinction? Why your Bhagavatam, your Bhagavat Puran is saying that this Krishna is too Bhagavan Swayam? Because Sukadeva Goswami, in the first canto of Bhagavatam, chapter 3, he's describing various incarnations and forms of the Lord. And after he finishes the entire list, he gets to verse 28. Chapter 3, first canto, verse 28. Then he says, Ette chamsha kala pumsa, Krishna's tu bhagavan swayam, indrari yakalam mridyanti yuge yuge. He says, alright, I've, Sukadeva Goswami, in summarizing, he said, alright, I've told you all about these different forms of Godhead, but all these forms, ette chamsa kala pumsa, all these personalities are simply amshas. They're simply parts. They're parts of some greater personality. They're simply expansions or aspects of some greater personality. And then Parikshit might say, well, who is that greater personality? Then he says, Krishna's. Krishna's too, Bhagavan, Swayam. I've told you so many Bhagavans. The Dasavatar, they're all Bhagavan. And Narayana is Bhagavan, and Ram, and all these are mentioned in this chapter 3. Then he says, but this Krishna, he is Swayam, Bhagavan. He is the form, the origin of all these other forms of Bhagavan. So this is, and then he comes in yuga after yuga in these different forms. So he's basically saying, it's something like, we give some discussion, we say, yes, this thing is like this and like that and like this and like that, but, and we use this word but the actual point is, it's like this. And so that's our conclusion. So Sukadeva Goswami's conclusion, there's this avatar and that avatar and das avatar, but actually you should understand, above and beyond all these avatars there is Krishna. And that's what I'm going to tell you about in the Srimad Bhagavatam. Although I will mention the other avatars, but the direction we're going with this Bhagavatam, with this discussion of Sukadeva to Parikshit, I'm going to take Parikshit to the lotus feet of Krishna in Vrindavan. And I'm going to deliver Parikshit to the lotus feet of Krishna and have him understand the pure topmost pinnacle of prema, the topmost expression of prema, which is embodied in the Braja Gopis, and most munificently, or let's say, most magnificently and beautifully portrayed in the form of Srimati Radharani. Well, now, so that's shown in Rasalila and also in Brahma Gita, the supremacy of Radharani's Braja Prema. Madhurya Ras, Madhurya Prem. So that's the goal, that's the direction that Sukadeva Goswami that's the goal that he's going to take Briksha to. That's why the 10th canto is described to be the Samambonam. Samambonam, the different cantos have different titles. Status quo, creation, and dynasties, etc. So the 10th canto is called the Samambonam. The complete perfection. Summum bonum. Oh, what is that? How does that translate? Manjari? Summum bonum means that it's some kind of Latin thing. The topmost benefit. Bonum means good or bonus. Summum means summit. The topmost good, the supreme benefit, the supreme conclusion. So that's the 10th canto. So what's the 10th canto about? About Krishna and his various dhammas. But as Rupa Goswami is telling us, the nectar of instruction of all these dhammas, Vrindavan dhamma is the highest. So the leelas in Vrindavan are the highest, and the form of Krishna where the leelas are the highest is obviously the highest form of Krishna. The highest form of Godhead is displaying its greatest leelas or highest leelas in the highest dham. And the highest dham is Vrindavan dham. And then there's Mathura and then Dwarka. This is all the substance of the 10th canto. In this verse, of course, it says, Rasena krishyate krishna rupam mesha rasastiti. commenting on this word, Srila Jiva Goswami Pad says, this word, rasena, in this verse about the form of Vishnu and Krishna, their oneness and their difference, this word rasena means by sweetness composed of the highest levels of prema. So in other words, and then there's a verb, utkrishyate, which means that this sweetness composed of the highest levels of prema is made eminent or shown very clearly in this form of Krishna. And therefore, because Krishna is displaying the sweetest expression of rasa and the most inconceivable form, then that form of Krishna is the supreme form of Godhead. The very nature of Krishna's rasas shows that his form is superior. Then he goes on to describe here. The queens, other than the principal eight queens, describe the supreme attractiveness of Krishna's form during a pilgrimage to Kurukshetra. Navayam Sadvi Samrajam Surajam Bhojam Apyuta Vairajam Parameshtyam Cha Anantyam Vahareparam Kamayamaha Etasya Srimat Pararajasriya Kucha Kunkama Gandatyam Murdna Votam Gadavrita Brajastriya Yadvanchanti Palindyas Krishna Viruda Gavashcharyato Gopa Parasparsha Mahatmanaha. So this is the queens of Dwarka, other than the eight queens, because the eight queens, Rukmini, Satyabhama, Mitravinda, Satya, Lakshmana, Kalindi, and Jambavati, these eight principal are called the Mukhya Mahishis, or the eight principal or chief queens of Krishna and Dwarka. They are considered to be expansions of the Ashtashakis of Vrindavan. For example, Rukmini is considered to be Chandravali, and Satyabhama is considered to be Radharani's expansion. And then one is Salita and Vishakha, and the other ones I can't recall, but in the commentaries they explain the identity, the Vrindavan identity and the Dwarka identity of these eight queens. So now the balance is the 16,108 princesses which were incarcerated by Narakasura and liberated by Krishna and subsequently married and accepted by him to be his wives in Dwarka. So they joined the principal eight queens, which Krishna won by various swayamvaras or circumstances, like the Shamantaka jewel story. Everyone knows the story that Krishna recovered the jewel from Jambavan after fighting him for 28 days and nights. And Jambavan, realizing that his Ram had appeared, his Lord, his worshipful Lord Ram, because Jambavan is a type of Chiranjeev, he lives for a long, long time. So Jambavan is the king of the bears. He was living in Treta Yuga, and he assisted Ramachandra in his battle against Ravana. He was continuing to exist even in Dwapara Yuga in the Krishna appearance avatar. So he's fighting Lord Krishna, and finally he felt somewhat embarrassed. He realizes that no one could have such power unless he is my Lord Ram. So my Lord Ram has come as Sham. Ram Sham. Sham Ram. So then he felt somewhat shy or embarrassed. So he gave, out of gratitude, he offered, of course, the Shamantaka jewel back to the Lord. And then he said, well, let me give you my other jewel. The greatest jewel I have in my possession is my beloved daughter, Jambavati, the daughter of Jambavan. So I'd like to present my Kanya, Kanyadhan, daughter, my virgin daughter and charity to you. So Krishna accepted Jambavati. So these eight queens of Dwarka are considered to be the expansions. Even Padma Puran says in one place, I can't say the English is correct, but it says like this at least. It says those who were gopis in their youth, when they grew up they became the queens of Dwarka. Of course, there's a lot of things that have to be considered here, but it says like that. But in other places, the Goswamis are saying that that's indeed a fact, that the in one form. Like we have the Samyogini Radha, Vyogini Radha, and Kirtita Sundari, or Kirtita Sutta, the daughter of Kirtita Ma. There are three forms of Radha, as there are three forms of Krishna, Vrindavan Krishna, Dwarka Krishna, Mathura Krishna, etc. So, these 16,108 queens, after they returned from Kurukshetra, they had all gone there for the solar eclipse, and then they saw Krishna, and they saw the gopis of Vrindavan, and they saw Nanda Maharaj, they saw so many personalities. Then they said, "O saintly women, we do not desire dominion over the earth, sovereignty of the King of Heaven. We don't want unlimited facility for enjoyment, mystic power, the position of Lord Brahma, immortality, or even attainment of the kingdom of God. We simply desire to carry on our heads the glorious dust of Lord Krishna's feet, enriched by the fragrance of kunkum from his consort's bosom. We desire the same contact with the Supreme Lord's feet that the young women of Braj, the Aborigine Palinda women, they desire the touch of that dust." So then Jiva Goswami, commenting on this verse, is saying these queens, they don't want any position, samraj, swarajyam, which means a position of Indra or position of king of the earth. They don't want any kind of enjoyments from that. They don't want the post of Brahma. And he just comments. Now he changes his purport by saying, in Taittiriya Upanishad, there is a description of bliss, stating with the bliss of human beings. It's a very interesting progression. What kind of bliss human beings can experience? And then it says, Teyes Shatam Manusha Ananda. If you multiply the bliss that humans can experience hundreds of times, one finally arrives at the amount of bliss of Brahma, and finally the bliss of Brahman. The infinity of that bliss is shown by the words Yato Vacho Nivartante, from which words turn away. Words cannot describe it. Even the infinity of bliss available in Brahman, the queens are saying, we do not desire. Moreover, we do not desire the abode of the Lord of Lakshmi, to live in proximity to the Lord. We do not want dependence on those things. Then the question is asked by Jiva Goswami, then what better thing do you desire to attain? And the queens say, we desire to carry on our heads the dust of the feet of the holder of the club. That means Gadadgudra. The feet of him who is known to all as our husband. In addition, we desire those feet which are endowed with a special treasure of being filled with the fragrance of the kunkum of Shri, which means Shriya, of Shri. So this is when the queens of Dwarka had visited Kurukshetra, they actually saw the gopis, the Braja gopis. And they saw how elated Krishna was to meet them and see them. And then they could understand how fortunate these gopis are and how insignificant we are. How insignificant is our attachment and our love for Krishna compared to these gopis of Vrindavan. So then they're developed such humility. They're saying, we desire just to have those feet, and those feet are very special because they have the kunkum of Shri adorning those feet. They're saying, we don't expect to have the embrace of Krishna or have such fortune as the gopis have, such intimate relationships they have with Krishna. They're just saying, we desire those feet which are endowed with the special treasure of being filled with the fragrance of the kunkum of Shri. So sometimes, in intimate dealings, Radharani holds Krishna's feet on her breast, on her chest. And the kunkum comes from there onto his feet. And they're saying, yes, we can't expect to have such an intimate relationship, but we just want to have the fragrance be in the proximity of the fragrance of such feet. And then the question is asked, But if you women reject the place of the Lord, you just also must reject the feet, which are smeared with the fragrance from Lakshmi's breast. And then the person is saying, but if Shri, if you take the word Shri to refer to Rukmini, then you already have those feet with her fragrance. So in other words, when they're saying Shri, it's referring not to the queens of Dwarka, because that's them. And this is the 16,100 queens. So someone might say, oh, are you speaking about Rukmini or the Ashta Mahishis? Are you speaking about their feet? Because Rukmini also has red coloring on her feet. She has kunkum. Maybe, are you speaking about the consort of Rukmini? And then they're saying no. Are you speaking about the consort of Lakshmi, Vaikuntha? Maybe Narayan? Maybe Lakshmi's holding his feet on her breast? And Jiva Goswami is saying no. Because then the next thing they say, so to understand the real meaning of what the queens are saying, there should be further specification. So this is in the next line of the verse. They say, Brajastriya, we desire the dust of the women of Braj, the dust that the women of Braj desired. And then he quotes this verse, the Palinda women of Vrindavan become disturbed by lust when they see the grass of Vrindavan marked with the reddish kunkum powder, endowed with the color of Krishna's lotus feet. This powder originally decorated the breasts of his beloveds. And when the aboriginal women smear it on their faces and breasts, they feel satisfied and give up all their anxiety. So what they're desiring, the queens are also desiring. Although the queens are living with Dwarkadish Krishna, and they could also hold his feet on their breasts, they were, after being in Kurukshetra, when they returned, they understood this Krishna, he is the greatest form of the Lord, and his devotees in Braj are the greatest devotees. So they actually became very humble before the Brijvasis. And these are the goddesses of fortune, Rukmini, Satyabhama. They're like the goddesses of fortune. And they're becoming, seemingly on one level, jealous of the fortune of the aborigines. You can imagine. If someone is a princess or a queen in a palace, and she has so much influence and so much opulence, and she becomes envious of a street sweeper. What does a street sweeper have? No physical beauty, no jewels, gems, opulence, position, influence. The Palinda women are just living in the forest, and they're collecting some wild herbs and some musk. Some of the chamari ox, they drop this musk here and there, and they collect this kasturi or musk. They collect the chandan, the sandalwood, and then they prepare it, and they cut it, and they dry it, and they bring it to Nanda Maharaj, to Nandagaon, or they go to Vrishabhana Maharaj, and they sell these things, kasturi and musk, and then they harvest. From the wild flowers, they harvest kunkum, and they harvest this saffron. Well, this is their livelihood. Just like we see here in Rajasthan. What we call gypsies. I don't know what they're called, the people that wander around here and there. And they have certain trades and activities that they engage in. They're usually very good in iron working, making horseshoes for the oxen and horses, and making some iron tools and implements. So they come to town and they make these things and people buy them. But you couldn't imagine that some king's wife would become envious of a traveling gypsy on a bullock cart making some iron nails and knives and things. But the queens of Dwarka, at least these 16,108, they were feeling so much. They were even appreciating, look how much fortune the Palinda women have, because they're in Braj, we're not in Braj. They're in Braj and they can see this kunkum on the grass, it's smeared on the grass. And when they see that, they understand, this kunkum is from Krishna's feet. And these feet were held on the breasts of his gopis, on the chest of the gopis. And this is this same dust, this same feet, extinguished the fire of the gopis' lust or intense desire, when they held Krishna's feet on their chest. So let us take the dust from his feet, his kunkum, which has fallen off Krishna's feet, has landed on the grass, and maybe the same effect will be on us. So then they take that dust, from Krishna's feet that originated from the chest of the gopis, and they rub it on their foreheads and their own chest, they feel so much happiness, so much relief. So in this verse, this word is there, what we read in the Sanskrit from the gopis, Trina Viruddha, refers to grass like Durva grass. The queens express themselves in this way because they hope to develop an experience and mood similar to the women of Braj from the continual influence of those feet infused with the fragrance of kunkum of Krishna's lovers. The type of desire of the inhabitants of Braj is described as kevalena hi bhavena. Kevalena hi bhavena gopyo ghavo naga mriga yenye muda dio naga siramami yur anjasa. 11th canto, 12:8. The Brijvasis, including gopis, cows, and trees, animals, living entities, bushes, thickets, and snakes like Kaliya, they all achieve perfection of life, the perfection of life, by unalloyed love for me, and thus very easily achieve me. Now here Krishna is speaking to Uddhava, and Uddhava Gita in 11th canto, he's saying, Uddhava, just see the effect of my Vrindavan, that everyone in Vrindavan, even the immovable living entities like trees, and snakes, even snakes, envious, lowly snakes that'll bite anyone that walks by. And Kali was so envious, he was polluting the whole water, and the air pollution from the water was killing the birds and fish. Even the cows fell unconscious upon drinking, and the coward boys lost their consciousness. So he's doing very bad work in Vrindavan. But Krishna is saying, listen, this is the benefit in Vrindavan. Everyone achieved love for me in Vrindavan, even trees and snakes. So this verse, Jiva Goswami is saying, by mentioning the coward boys in the end of the list, which is the queen's verse we read, the queen suggests that the coward boys are disqualified since they are male, even though some of them are very close friends, Priya Narmasakas. That means like Subal, Arjun, Gandharva, Vasant, Ujjwala. These are called Priya Narmasakas. These particular Sakas of Krishna, these eight, they can actually somewhat perceive and understand Krishna's intimate pastimes with the gopis, his conjugal ras. They themselves are situated in Sakhi ras, but there's some sprinkling of perception and understanding of Krishna's Madhurya Ras with the gopis. And so much so that around the banks of Shamakund, there are eight different kunjas, and each one belongs to a different coward boy. These are called the Ashtasakas, these Priyanarmasakas. There's Subal and Sridham, Kinkini, and the list is here also, some Arjun, Gandharva, Vasant, Ujjwala. So they're so much intimate, that, because Radhakund is a place of Krishna and all the gopis. So how these gopis got here? Because they have some access, they have some entrance, because their hearts are very much open and very much identifying with Krishna's conjugal mood towards the gopis. So they sometimes carry messages, they sometimes help Radha and Krishna meet together, even try to cool down Krishna's unhappiness by mediating between he and Radha. So even they're taking part in the pastimes right at Radhakund, in Madhyan Leela. And no other male person can come there. But Madhav Mangal's there, Subal's there, these boys. And when Krishna's desiring to enjoy very intimately or privately with Srimati Radharani, then he asked Madhav Mangal and Subal, he asked Brindadevi, so Brindadevi, why don't you take Madhav Mangal and Subal to the banana grove, to the banana patch? Because near the outer part of the gardens and forests, there's some banana patch. And let them eat their fill of bananas. Because after all, they're young coward boys. I mean, Madhav Mangal's a Brahmin, but they're young boys, and they've been running behind the cows all morning, so they must be very hungry. So you can keep them occupied over there in the banana patch, and I'll stay here with Radharani. So then the coward boys, they understand, oh, okay, we understand. You have some other work to do over here. some other engagement. So we'll make ourselves scarce, as they say. We'll disappear from the scene. And they do that, and then they come back. And even sometimes, these Priyanarmasakas had the privilege, the very intimate privilege of being able to fan Radha and Krishna. They're inside the kunj, and they can pull on the ceiling fan, and the flower fan, or leaves, or whatever. And they can render service, even in settings like that. So, the queens of Dwarka, since they saw these coward boys at Kurukshetra, they're also mentioning them in their list of how fortunate they are. That even they can experience some of these sentiments that the gopis are experiencing. But what about us? So the meaning is this. The scriptures describe the desire of Lakshmi, the most famous among women. But even she was not qualified, as is stated by the wise of Kaliya, the Nagapatnis even explained. O Lord Krishna, we do not know how our husband, the serpent Kaliya, has attained such a great opportunity of being touched by the dust of your lotus feet. For this end, the goddess of fortune performed austerities for centuries, giving up all their desires and taking austere vows. So Nagapatnis seem to be aware of the fact that Srimati Lakshmi Devi has left Vaikuntha and come to Vrindavan and taken residence under a bilva tree or bale tree in the forest of Bilvavan, about 20-minute walk from the Yamuna. And she's intensely engaged in austerities there simply to attain this fulfillment of her desire to be touched by the dust of the feet of Krishna. She has so much dust falling on her hands and her head because her place is Padasevanam. Lakshmi attained perfection by Vishnu Padasevanam. By massaging the feet of Vishnu, she's always there. She gives up her position on his chest and she stays humbly at his feet, serving him, practically like Dasyabhav or Dasyabhav. Although officially their relationship is Madhura, this married husband and wife, but her practical expression of service is more in the mood of Dasya, like a Malish, like a masseuse. And so she's massaging, and so much dust from Vishnu's feet is falling on her hands and head. But she's not satisfied. She's witnessed Krishna's pastimes in Braj. She's heard about them, the Shrutis describe them sometimes, and then she's had the opportunity to hear the music of the rasa dance and even see the dancing. And that was all it took. Because by that association with Krishna, she became attached. He became attracted. But she didn't want to, she wasn't able to give up her mood of being a queen. She wasn't willing to humiliate herself or humble herself to develop the sufficient humility to follow the simple coward damsels of Braj. As Prabhupada often says, the cowherd damsels of Braj. This means the gopis. So, but she did, she would do austerity. She was very determined. This is one of the qualities of Kshatriyas, determination. Valor, courage in battle, determination. That's mentioned in Bhagavad Gita. So she was very determined to fulfill her desire, being the queen of Vaikuntha, but still she's there to this day. And Bilvavan. So the Nagapatnis are saying, listen, even Lakshmi doesn't get the dust of the feet. Even the Palinda women, the Aborigine women of Vrindavan are more fortunate than Lakshmi Devi. The gypsies, the Vrindavan gypsies, they're getting the dust, at least they're picking the dust off the grass, the kunkum from Krishna's feet that originated from the chest of the gopis. And specifically it says Shri. Shri means a specific gopi, Srimati Radharani. So this is very special, high class, Radharaj. Not Brajaraj, but Radharaj, which is endued with all of her prema and mahabhav. So now Uddhava has said the same thing. Yavai Sri Architam Majadi Vir Aptakamer Yogeshvare Rapi Yadatmani Rasa Gostim Krishnasya Tad Bhagavata Charanaravindam Nyastam Saneshu Vijahu Parirabhyatapam. He says in Brahmar Gita, end, verse 62, chapter 47. The goddess of fortune herself, along with Lord Brahma, and all the other demigods, who are masters of yoga perfection, can worship the lotus feet of Krishna only within her mind. So she's able to do Manasi Seva. We're discussing about Manasi Seva. But during the Rasa dance, Lord Krishna placed his feet upon these gopis' breasts, and by embracing those feet, the gopis gave up all distress. So now Jiva goes on. Not even a woman in the position of Rukmini and Dwarka is qualified because of the difference in time and place, nor is the devotion expressed by Lakshmi comparable to the devotion of the women of Braj. This is another verse by Uddhava. Nayam Sriyonga, Nayam Sriyonga, Nayam Sriyonga, Nitanta Rate Prasada, Sriyoshi Tam Nali Naganda, Rucham Kutonya, Nasotsavesya Bhujadanda Grihita Kanta, Tam Dashi Tam Gya Uragad Vrajavalabhinam. Uddhava Mahashaya said, the Braja Gopis receive benedictions from the Lord that neither Lakshmi Devi nor the most beautiful dancers in the heavenly planets could attain. In the Rasa dance, the Lord showed his favor to the most fortunate gopis by placing his arms on their shoulders and dancing with each of them individually. No one can compare with the gopis who receive the causeless mercy of the Lord. So, we don't read any accounts of Lord Narayan or Lord Vishnu going into the forest of Vaikuntha and having a rasa dance with Lakshmi or the queens and Vaikuntha. There's no account. There's no rasa dance there. There's no Julan Leela there. There's no Holy Leela there. There's no Vamshi Chori stealing the flute. Lakshmi doesn't make some plan someday and steal Vishnu's chakra. Oh, I think I'll steal his chakra today and hide it under my dress or hide it in my braid. Lakshmi never steals Vishnu's conch shell and passes it on to a friend. It just doesn't happen. But every day in Radhakund, there's what they call Vamshi Chori or Vamshi Chorya, Vamshi Chori Leela, where the gopis, somehow or other, they manage to, because of Krishna's own bewilderment, his Mohan aspect, he becomes bewildered by Mohini, Madan Mohan Mohini. Krishna is the enchanter, but Radharani is the enchanter of the enchanter. She's the supreme enchantress. So she manages to bewilder Krishna and bewilder his flute also, so his flute becomes infidel and falls from Krishna's hand during Julan Leela or while he's in Shayan Leela sleeping, and then the gopis snatch it up and hide it. And Krishna has to spend the better part of the afternoon trying to recover his lost flute, his stolen flute. Of course, the gopis make very, very funny comments about this because Krishna says, listen, Cupid has given me power of eternity. Cupid, the god of love, Kamadev, has made me a deputy sheriff. He has deputized me just for this particular theft. For this particular theft case, I have been made a deputy sheriff in this district, Mathura Mandal district. So because I'm now appointed, although generally I'm not a sheriff, but because of this, the extent of this theft, the actual sheriff is not able to do the work. So I've been appointed to search all the people of Braj to look for my stolen flute. Because sometimes stolen goods are hidden somewhere in a person's house or hidden on his body, just like these drug smugglers. Sometimes they put this heroin inside a balloon, and then they swallow the balloon, and then when they pass stool, the heroin comes out. At least hopefully. Otherwise, you can get a lot of indigestion. So they can hide stolen goods in various novel ways, on the body, in the body, or around the body, in the premises of one's domicile, or precincts of one's domicile. So Krishna proceeded to search each gopi. I'm the deputy sheriff. I have to see, maybe you've hidden my flute somewhere in the front side or backside or somewhere. And then the gopis start joking with him, what is this? You've been appointed a deputy sheriff. You're just using this as an excuse to fondle our bodies. And how do we know? You probably took the flute and gave it to Mata Mangal, or you gave it to Subal, or you buried it somewhere on the beach in Jamuna. Now you're running around, theft, theft, thief, thief, chore, chore, chore. Someone stole my flute. And you're making these false accusations here and there simply because it gives you a chance to, you know, touch our bodies in all the wrong or right places or whatever. So this is described by Krishna's Kaviraj in Govindali Lamrita and Bhavanamrita by Vishwanath. It's a very pleasing pastime to the of the Lord's, the stealing of the flute. And maybe he deliberately makes the flute slip from his belt when he's having julin, or when he's sleeping, he makes it deliberately fall so that he can enjoy the pleasure of recovering his stolen flute. Certainly there's a lot of hasya ras and a lot of shringar ras, a lot of sweet exchanges during this one of the most famous pastimes of the Lord, the stealing of Krishna's flute. There's such innocence in Krishna's pastimes to think, I mean, it's really quite a simple thing that you have a little tiny bamboo bansuli, this little tiny bamboo flute, which is only worth about half a paisa. It's not worth anything. Everything has value, and especially in Braj. You might see some cow dung paddy or some gober, you think, oh, this is only some cow stuff, cow poop or cow dung. This doesn't have any value. But then you go to someone and say, can I have 5 or 10 of those? Say, yes, it's 30 paisa for one. One cow dung paddy at today's rates, stool has gone up. In the marketplace, I remember when I was first dealing in stool shares. My first dealing in stool shares back in 1988, you could get one cow pizza for 10 paisa. One of those we call like pizza, right? A little gober pie. Gober pie was 10 paisa. It was 80 rupees 100 or something like that. If you buy 100. Now if you want to buy one, it's 30 to 40 paisa for one. That's inflation. Even if inflation has hit the gober. Even gober costs more. Same cow, same stuff, but the price has increased. So you can imagine, even a bamboo flute, bamboo is growing everywhere in the jungle. Vrindavan, remember, mind you, Vrindavan was a jungle. There's so much bamboo growing because there's so many lakes and rivers everywhere, lots of water necessary for bamboo. So you just snap off a piece and put a few holes and dry it in the sun and wrap a few strings around it so it doesn't crack. And then you're ready to go. You have a flute. So much to do about nothing. So, but this flute, value is nothing. But the rustic value is crores. Crores and crores of rupees of rustic value. So much rust this dry piece of bamboo produces. It's simply dry. It's dry as a bone, as they say. Dried out bamboo, what kind of juice can you get out of that? That's like you take some sugar cane, you put it through this grinder, these wheels, and then you get everything out of it. They really get everything out. They fold it this way and that way, and they fold it in half, and then quarters and eighths and sixteenths, and unwind it and fold it the other way, and turn it right and left and upside down, and put it through there until you can't get a half a drop of juice out of that thing. And so that means there's rust. Juice means rust, flavor, bliss, whatever. So now this bamboo is like that. It's like sugarcane, same type of family. And then once it's dried out and cut and dried in the sun, there's no juice. But this dried flute produces so much ras, so much braja ras in Krishna's lila. So this is the beauty and attractiveness of Krishna's braja lila. It's very simple. It's very simple, it's very innocent, but it's very juicy. And the bhakti rasamrita sindhu is like ocean of rasa. And these sweet pastimes, they captivate the heart. Because you hear about Narayan, he's flipping his chakra here and there, cutting off heads and creating universes with his belly button and things, and you know, lotus flowers and Brahmas. I mean, it's not so enchanting. There's not much sweetness in it. But the Madhura Rasa of Krishna, it's very simple, innocent pastime, stealing butter. It's the nature of little children to steal. They always pick up something, put it in their mouth, pick up something, walk away with it. Somebody says, hey, where are you going? And they don't know. They don't know better. Stealing is their nature. It's rather their common thing. But imagine that Bhagavan, that God is doing like this. It's too much captivating. I mean, for some small group of people. Some people don't believe it. They can't accept it. They think it's mythology. But for those fortunate people, then they gravitate towards this form of the Lord and they dedicate their entire beings to the worship of Krishna and Vrindavan. And they could never give him up for anything. So, we'll stop there. We'll continue with this purport tomorrow. It goes on for quite a few pages describing this. Now we're getting down to, we're not interested in mukti, we're not interested in any form of promotion, we're only interested in God. A bhakta means one who's doing sadhana is only interested in God, Vishnu. That's how this is the progression of the presentation. And then Rupa Goswami is saying, alright, you're not interested in any kind of liberation, you just want to do seva. Well, Vishnu has there's different forms of Vishnu, and which one are you interested in? Then he, of course, actually, obviously, Rupa Goswami is going to present the supremacy of the Krishna form. This is the form. First of all, we only want to do seva. All right, that means devotional service. You're not interested in anything material or even any spiritual promotion. You just want to serve the Lord. Well, the Lord has different forms. Are they all one? Are all the same? You want to serve all of them, or is one better than the other? Then he's trying to establish, no, this form. This form. Even the most intimate worshippers, even the most intimate worshippers of different forms of the Lord are agreeing that this form, Krishna form, is supreme. That's what our argument is. That's a kind of a summary of the arguments being presented so far. And then as he presents this, gradually we are supposed to, he's building his platform, his foundation. Yes, I don't want anything but service. Service is desirable, it's blissful to hear the pastimes and remember the form, to have thousands of ears to hear about him, thousands of tongues to glorify him. Servitors like Dhruva and Prahlad and all these different devotees, they don't care if Shiva, Indra, etc. They're happy just to serve the Lord. Well, the Lord has many forms. I've heard Ananta Rupam in Brahma Samhita. The Lord has many forms. Is service to all the forms the same? Are all the forms the same? And then Rupa Goswami is trying to explain, no, there's differences. There's oneness and difference. And then gradually you'll get to the point, well, okay, Krishna's service, and then how do you do that? Because this is all the discussion of sadhana bhakti, and the level of, this is the mixture of sambandha tattva, the foundation in avideya. Because to do avideya, you need sambandha, so he's building the sambandha, the relationship, who am I, what do I aspire for, what is my sadhya, who is my ishta, and which ishta should I choose? Where will I find the greatest bliss, or where is the greatest nectar? Where is that nectar ocean of bhakti? And then so he's developing his theme. So then he's describing that even Lakshmi, who's a more intimate servant of God? There's thousands and millions of Vaikuntha planets, and millions of Lakshmis, and millions of Narayans, and these Lakshmis they want to serve this Krishna Vrindavan. It's not just me, Rupa Goswami, who's trying to beat the drum. I happen to like Krishna. I happen to worship Krishna. So everybody follow me. I'm making a political campaign. I'm in Congress Party. Now you all listen to my platform. And you all vote for Congress and join me in the Congress Party. And everyone's... So he's saying, no, it's not only my subjective viewpoint, but it's very objective. And then from different angles of vision, even the worshippers of other forms of Godhead, even the most intimate... worshippers of other forms of God that are pointing their fingers they're pointing their finger that way. Yes, Krishna, he's supreme. I want his service. I want even the dust of his feet. They're saying that. So we say, oh, I have to take this very seriously. Lakshmi's saying this, and so many personalities are saying this. Maybe there's something to it. It's not just Rupa Goswami's prejudice. There's a strong foundation for this. This is the sambandha, the foundation. So it's the argument kind of slowly develops because there's only 40 minutes each day, but That's just to give you the general idea where it's going.